ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
Arjuna said, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who treated me exactly like an intimate friend, has left me alone. Thus, my astounding power, which astonished even the demigods, is no longer with me. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable, is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. No one, therefore, can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. When the Lord descends on the earth along with His eternal, ever-liberated associates, He not only displays the divine energy possessed by Himself, but also empowers His associate devotees with the required energy to execute His mission of incarnation. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord and His eternal associates descend on the earth many times, but the Lord remembers all the different roles of incarnations, whereas the associates, by His supreme will, forget them. Similarly, the Lord takes away with Him all His associates when He disappears from the earth. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when His mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna, because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required, and they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible even for a great devotee like Arjuna or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of the ordinary living beings who are but figs compared to such great souls? The lesson is, therefore, that no one should be puffed up for his powers borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obliged to the Lord for such benefactions and must utilize such power for the service of the Lord. Such power can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord, so the best use of such power and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. As Arjuna is astonished that he's lost his astonishing power. Arjuna's power, which astonished others, Arjuna took as normal for himself. He thought, I'm so powerful, this is me, I'm like that. Now he's realizing that the power is given by Krishna and Krishna can take it away. It's not my power. I don't have any personal ability. Hiranyakashipu attained great power by performing austerities and then getting the blessings from Lord Brahma. It was like the blessings he was given like by Lord Brahma, he was practically taken by force. That you give me these blessings, otherwise by the power of his austerities, the whole universe was going to be placed into a very difficult position. Either way, it was placed in a very difficult position. Either by Hiranyakashipu's austerities, which were immediately giving so much suffocation and suffering to the earth, or otherwise by what he would do with the power when he got from it. So he is very powerful and very proud of his power, that now he becomes so strong. But he found that Prahlad was more powerful than he, because Prahlad could defy his power. So when he asked Prahlad, what is the source of your power? Because he thought, what did this little boy do? I went to so much trouble to get my power, and he's more powerful than me because he can defy me. So where did he get his power? Where did you get your power from? At that point, Hiranyakashipu practically admitted his defeat before Prahlad. When he said, where do you get your power from? That means he's actually admiring and envying that power. But Prahlad said that the source of my power and the source of your power is the same. We all get our power from the same source. We may think that I'm getting it by myself or in some other way. Just like all power, that we have electric power, that there's can be produced from coal or from the movement of water or from solar panels or from burning oil. There are different from atomic fission. So there are various ways of producing electricity, but the original source or the original source of that power is the subtle fire element. When we say earth, water, fire, air, ether, so fire, that is electricity is a transformation of fire. Atad bhasa yase bhasa ete suya nasha shanka na pavaka. There is no sun, no moon, no wind. Prabhupada translates electricity. So electricity is a transformation of fire. We see that sometimes. The lightning forks up, like fire goes up into the sky. Or we put the plug into the socket and sparks come. So the source of all power is Krishna. And one becomes most powerful by recognizing the source of that power. And one will be bereft of that power if he defies the source of that power. Now here we see that Arjuna, he wasn't defying Krishna, but he'd been given some special power for a special purpose, and then it was withdrawn. So Arjuna is famous as Dhanadhara, as the bearer of the bow, Gandiva bow. He's famous as Parantapa, the one who defeated his enemies. He's famous as Dhananjay, one who by his heroic exploits brought wealth for performing the sacrifice. He's not remembered for he's not famous for having been conquered by what were apparently a gang of cowherd men. So he's glorious. His power made him glorious. He used that in the service of Krishna. Whereas Hiranyakashipu, although he's known as being very remembered as being powerful, but he's more remembered for being defeated by Nrsimhadeva. So Arjuna's power brought him glory, even though it was taken away. And Hiranyakashipu's power brought him infamy. It was also taken away by the Lord. He gives and he takes away. So the source of Hiranyakashipu's power, the source of Arjuna's power, the source of Prahlad's power, and the source of all of our power is Krishna. We all have some power. Everyone has some power. Even to pick up this kartal requires some power. An ant cannot do that. Even a lot of ants put together can't pick up a kartal. Sometimes you see ants, they pick up some big bug, and you're surprised how the little ants can pick up a bug which is much bigger than them. But they have their limit. Any number of ants put together can't pick this kartal up and take it away, although for us it's a very easy thing to do so. But Krishna can take that power away also. Sometimes when you become very sick, you don't have the power even to get up. I remember once in Calcutta, I was lying so sick, and the bathroom door was just on the other side of the room, and I would look at it for like hours, thinking, how can I possibly, I hadn't go past water, but it's just how can I get up? It's just, I couldn't think it possible to get up and go to the bathroom. It's just, where's the energy to do that? So, the same body that was a short time before that, running up and down stairs and jumping and kirtan, and then sickness came, and then even to stand up and walk to the bathroom is like more difficult than climbing Mount Everest in good health, it seemed to me. So Krishna gives and Krishna takes away. And Krishna gives power to each jiva. He gives opulence, power, according to their karmana daiva netrena, jantur deho bhakti, according to what they deserve and what they... In the case of a great devotee like Arjuna, his power is given to him. There's no question of deserving according to his fruitive results, but according to how he can utilize that. So a devotee may become empowered for a specific purpose. Just like devotees are going out and distributing books, and we'll find that when we're doing that, if we're really praying to Krishna and not thinking, I am the doer, then Krishna gives the intelligence what to say just so that the person will become enlivened to take the book. Whereas if we're thinking, I'm going to distribute the books, then we don't get the mercy of Krishna, and we don't get the... We don't distribute. People, they're not inclined to take. But if simply praying to Krishna, then the power comes. It's not our power. The power comes to just exactly what should be said. And the person becomes inclined to take the book. So many examples like that. Devotees are empowered by Krishna to spread Krishna consciousness. Kali kali yuga dharma nama sankirtan Krishna shakti bina naheta pravartan. In this Kali Yuga, the yuga dharma, or the method of approaching Bhagavan, is through Harinam sankirtan. And one who is empowered by Krishna can do that work of spreading Krishna consciousness. Some devotees are extremely, they're especially empowered. We can see, we will say, one a highly empowered devotee, we understand as Shatya Veshavata, someone who came to this world specifically for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness, being empowered by the Lord. So we accept great powerful acharyas like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharyas. They're not ordinary persons who were born because of their karma, just like some people used to say that this Bhaktivedanta Swami, he was a good businessman, and then because of that he was able to be successful in spreading Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, commenting on that one, said, well, it may be true to some extent, but that's some worldly knowledge, but that's not the main reason. It's because Krishna wanted it. He wanted to work through Prabhupada. So that may be an extenuating factor, but it's not the essential factor. Krishna, whoever said that, they have no idea what Krishna consciousness is, because Krishna consciousness is not spread by any material means. They just wanted to reduce Prabhupada's glorious transcendental efforts. They just wanted to say that it's all mundane. So that's envious, actually, to make a statement like that. So certainly Prabhupada was highly empowered by the Lord, and he empowered his disciples also to take up Krishna consciousness and spread it to others. So one who is desirous to serve the Lord, to serve Krishna, Krishna empowers him. Devotees are all very special people. If we see the horoscopes, I heard the other day, you're looking at horoscopes of devotees. So when we hear someone's horoscope, devotees, you'll find something like this. Very pious soul, very righteous person, an empowered soul. The other day I saw someone had written for one of my disciples something. Some astrological comments, an empowered soul. So, if you read that, you might think, oh, well, I'm very special.
If you think like that, immediately all the power goes away. The power comes by thinking, Jogata Bichare Kichu Nahipai Tomara Korunasha. That I don't have any power of my own, which is a fact. None of us have any power of our own. Empowered means we don't have any power of our own. It means that the power is coming from somewhere else. Shakti Avesh, not Shaktiman. There's a difference. Shakti Avesh means empowered, and Shaktiman means powerful. There's a difference. Bhagawan is Shaktiman. And to every Ansha, Jiva, to every Jiva, he gives some power. To Hitler was also very powerful. He also got his power from Krishna in an indirect way through the agency of Kali, the destructive feature of the material energy. Not that he was worshipping Kali directly, but he was also empowered. Kali is also very powerful. So everyone gets power, but a devotee is empowered by the Lord according to his degree of surrender, of thinking that I am not myself anything great, just like Prabhupada always used to say. If anything is ever, whatever wonderful thing happened to me in spreading Krishna consciousness, all the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. Because he thought like that, the mercy came through. And if we think like that, then we can also become empowered. And Prabhupada, he wanted that his disciples become empowered to take up this Krishna consciousness and spread it everywhere. And certainly, many special souls are taken to Krishna consciousness. You don't have to go to an astrologer to see that, but if you do, then you can see that you'll find in the chart something like this. Pious, very, very pious, very righteous, and then maybe something like this. Empowered. We have to be very careful though. You see something like that and then you start to think, well, I must be greater than Lord Brahma or something like that. Then you lose your whole balance. There's your whole perspective of thinking, I am an insignificant servant. As long as one thinks like that, then one is safe in Krishna consciousness. But as soon as one starts to think, well, I'm very special, then the power starts to drain away. And we've seen it in our movement. Some of our devotees, they were actually very powerful. But they became intoxicated by that power. And then the power just drained away. So when we see, you may see empowered soul. But then we should understand that this is not an intrinsic feature of me. Because I... by the grace of the Lord, if he so desires, his energy, some small part of his energy may work through me. But he is the giver and the taker of power, so he can take it away at any time. Doesn't matter what the chart says. The chart says empowered, but you can lose that power also by thinking, I am empowered. Or by trying to be empowered, one loses the power. One should simply think how to become a servant. If one starts to think that, yes, now I should my name should go down in history. Just like there was one of our God brothers, he said, I was studying religious history. But then I thought, instead of studying religious history, I should make religious history. And he did in a small way. He made a big mess of. He got some followers and then made a big mess because he thought that he would introduce that if he was just following what his guru did, then where would be his glory? So he introduced some radical changes to the system of Krishna consciousness. And not surprisingly, his situation in Krishna consciousness also radically changed. So within the small world of ISKCON, he's become infamous. So he was already famous, He was already respected, but he thought, I have to do something more and different to really prove myself. He was interested in being glorious, so he didn't see that the glory is simply in following Srila Prabhupada. He had to do something different. And then he became infamous. So this is a trap, actually, to think that I should become well known, I should go down in history, that people in the future, they will write books about me and I will be recorded. Yeah. I will be recorded and my samadhi will become a pilgrimage site. And people all over the world will recognize me as a great religious leader. That desire can contaminate the heart. And then instead of acting in a manner which is for the benefit of others and acting always thinking that one is a servant of one's guru, one is acting in such a way that one will be noticed, acting in such a way that people will become awed or impressed that, oh, this is a very great spiritual person. But what happens actually, that if you do like that, then you start to attract very shallow people. And people who are actually serious, they can see through it. It's just yet another showman. There are millions of people trying to make religious history. There's India especially is full of so many bogus people who want to advertise themselves as incarnations or Mahabhagavats or something like this. So one can call oneself Jagat Guru or Rasik Shiromani, the best of the Rasik devotees, and or whatever. One can put one some title or try to show one is better than the previous acharyas, the most significant acharya in history or whatever. But it's guaranteed to be a flop because it's not real. We're chanting now every morning second canto, second chapter, first verses of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. That which is real will last, and that which is not unreal, it won't last. So there are many varieties of cheating or misrepresentation of religion, and they come in very, that's always there in various forms. But the actual reality of Krishna consciousness, that will go on eternally, because that is the eternal dharma of the jiva, which is given by Bhagavan, who is eternal. And maya is, here we see the word is bandhurupi. Bhagavan is bandhurupi. He came as in the form of a friend to Arjuna. And maya is bahurupini. She comes in many forms. All transformations of forgetfulness of Krishna, envy of Krishna. So if one starts to think, I'm very special, or people should notice me, then even if the name of bhakti, if we do that, then what's going on is that instead of cultivating our mood of utter subservience to Krishna and his devotees, we are actually cultivating envy of Krishna. It's maya. To think, I should be noticed, I should be considered very big, I am special, I deserve respect, that means we're trying to take the position of Krishna. Now, it is the duty of one who has accepted, it's a great paradox, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, is a great paradox. that, you know that word, paradox? Dvidha. It's a dilemma. How a devotee who's cultivating subservience to Krishna, when he takes the role of guru, then by Krishna's order he has to accept respect. But he doesn't accept it on his behalf. As soon as he starts thinking, now this is for me, then you get spiritual indigestion. It sits like a stone. Just like you can't digest food, it may be like feeling like a big stone in the stomach, and it just causes sickness. So in the same way, we the jiva has no power to digest respect. And unless he offers that to Krishna, then through the disciplic succession, then it simply turns into poison. So a devotee, everything he does is for the pleasure of Janardan, Bhagavan, Krishna. Not for the Janata, not for the people in general. A devotee is not an actor on a stage who's hoping that at the end of the performance people will clap. That is that becomes a showman. Showman makes a show and his reward is hearing everyone clap. But a devotee, he simply wants to please Krishna. Even if the whole Janata do not like him and do not cheer him, he doesn't care. He wants to satisfy Krishna. And quite likely if he's trying to satisfy Krishna, then the Janata, the people in general, they won't like it, because the people in general, they have viparita ruchi. They have perverted taste. That's why people say that, we should be normal, and then we should be like normal people, and then the people in general will respect us and accept us. We hear it in India also. It's quite common in the West. Some of our big leaders are promoting this. But the problem with this is that to do the things that are considered respectable and worthy by the karmis, it's all antithetical to Krishna consciousness. That you should be materially ambitious and have a big house and a big car and all this kind of thing. It's possible to have these things in Krishna consciousness, but cultivating the desire for all these things, it's antithetical to Krishna consciousness. And then we should take our children to the movies and so, but all these things, then the people will think, oh yes, they're normal. But it's all works against Krishna consciousness. So actually one has to be empowered by Krishna even to follow Krishna consciousness. One has to take strength from Krishna, because everyone is very much concerned what others think of us. It's very difficult to overcome this desire not to be considered odd, to be accepted by the people in general. It's very difficult to go against what people in general are thinking and to accept criticism of others. So one has to have power. That power comes from conviction that, yes, this is the correct path, and whatever everyone else says is not the correct path. What Krishna is giving us, that is correct. What everyone else is following, that's not correct. So one has to be convinced of that. Then one gets the power to follow, even though people may scorn us and dislike us. And then what to speak? Anyway, people, the karmis, they're all criticizing each other anyway. So don't think that if you try, I shall be a model karmi, and then the people won't, then they'll accept us. But the karmis, they just criticize each other anyway. If they don't criticize you for being a devotee, they'll criticize you for something else. They're envious by nature. And anyway, why should you care so much about what they think? But one needs to be empowered to to follow this process and to bring others to this process. That requires power from Krishna, that one is so much convinced and so much wanting to serve the parampara and so much compassionate for others that he's able to change other ways, other people's way of thinking. That is the meaning of preaching. Jibe viparita ruchi pari bartam kara pracha. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. That preaching means to change the perverted mentality of the conditioned souls. So becoming one of them, that doesn't do the job. That means that they changed us. But it means to, that's why Prabhupada said, we shouldn't care about public opinion. We should change them to be like us, not us to be like them. So that requires power from Krishna to do that. One can do so by being very humble and considering oneself a servant. If one wants to take respect from others for being a great preacher, then actually one cannot preach. If one is anxious that I will be famous as a great preacher and people will respect me, then we can't preach. We might be able to gather many people around us, but that doesn't fit the definition of preaching. Jive biparita ruchi paribartan kara. Preaching means to change, affect a change in the way of people's, their whole mentality and their whole outlook. So preaching isn't just a matter of gathering many people to say jai, but if it means to change the whole way of thinking, and as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, just to even to bring one person actually into Krishna consciousness, you may have to spend hundreds and hundreds of gallons of blood. How much effort is required? Chidrakta, transcendental blood. That means not that we're giving, what is that, blood transfusions, blood donations. But means so much transcendental effort. And one has to be prepared to, one has to be very tolerant. And so many times you're preaching to people and they're coming up and they look, and then all of a sudden they just go away, and they may become envious of you or turn against you. Preaching, as we've often heard it said, is a thankless task. If we want that people will appreciate, then we can do something like that. Lokaranjana, something to please people, what they think is pleasing. But actually preaching, it appears to the non-devotees or the materially attached devotees, Prakriti Bhaktas, what actual preaching appears to be a threat to them. That we're threatening them with having to give up their material desires and everything they've dedicated their life for, everything they believe in. If the leaders of society actually read these books, they'd either become devotees or they'd ban them, because they're actually very, very dangerous books. We're advocating close the slaughterhouses, close the factories, no more oil drilling. It's all religions. They're all so-called religions, they should all be stopped. It's all cheating religion. Only religion, Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, from the karmi point of view, what Prabhupada is advocating is very hard line. Actually, it's very soft line. I mean, soft line means that those who are soft-hearted, they will appreciate. But people are very hard-hearted. They make a show of being very broad-minded, and we appreciate everybody. They appreciate nobody. This we appreciate everybody means that you give me enough space to do my sense gratification, You don't disturb my sense gratification and I won't disturb yours. And then I like you and you like me. But it's just mutual, it's actually based on mutual envy. So everything what the karmis say, it's all opposite of what they actually mean. They're expert in double talk, hypocrisy. And devotees, they speak the truth. That everything else except Krishna consciousness is simply violence. The worst violence is not to give knowledge of Krishna. They're complaining, oh, why they're attacking Iraq, that's bad. But then everyone is violent. If parents give the TV to their children to watch, that's violence. If they don't teach them about Krishna, that's violence. Because it is anything except teaching about Krishna is severely detrimental to the benefit of that jiva. So one has to be empowered by Krishna to, first of all, to accept this, that mostly we don't want to accept, to understand this philosophy, even to understand what's in Prabhupada's books is very straightforward and clear. But unless we ourselves are very straightforward and clear that what we want, then we'll read something else. We'll find something else. It's quite possible to read Prabhupada's books if one is reading in a different mood than that of being a blank slate. Sarvametha Britang Manye Yang Mang Vadasi Keshava. Krishna, Arjuna said to Krishna, I accept everything you say, Krishna. If we're reading in a different mood, then it's quite possible for us to pervert what Prabhupada says and think, well, this doesn't apply to me. Especially when there's so much propaganda going around like this, that this propaganda going around, don't be fanatical. By fanatical they mean don't follow the basic principles that Prabhupada taught us, that all the acharyas and shastras have taught us. And they've, out of envy, out of disobedience to Prabhupada, out of cultivation of their viparit ruchi, out of hypocrisy, they label just following the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, they call it fanaticism. It's actually very offensive to Srila Prabhupada to redefine everything that he came to teach. They've packed it up in a parcel and put it on a shelf called fanaticism. Don't go near there. Dangerous substance. And they go on with their plans for enjoying this material world with a label of Krishna consciousness on it. So to preach Krishna consciousness, one requires power from the Lord. First of all, we should understand what that preaching is. Preaching isn't just collecting many people who don't really care for you. They'll say jai, but they don't care for you because they care for their sense gratification. One who cares for his sense gratification only cares for someone else as long as they can give sense gratification to them. There's no actual love in this material world. Just what they call love is that you become attached to someone due to their ability to give me sense gratification. But actual love begins from the platform of surrender to Krishna, to give up, Nija prati cheshta? What is that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says? Barashacharya. I've given up hope of my own endeavors to act for myself. Surrendered soul. Bhaktivinoda Thakur very kindly taught us in so many songs what does it mean to surrender to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an empowered soul. He has presented Krishna consciousness in his writings in a manner that is not possible for a materially attached devotee, even though he presents himself as materially attached, to teach us. It's not possible for a materially attached devotee or for one who is not completely pure in heart. They cannot present Krishna consciousness so nicely, so clearly, in his songs, in his writings. So he is empowered. But one who thinks, I should become empowered, it's a very foolish idea. I should become famous. What is the use? What is the point? So many, Vidyapati says, what is that? That koto chaturanana mari mari jauto. How many Brahmas have come and gone? We're thinking, I shall be very big. I shall be recognized. With how many Brahmas, universal creators, have come and gone? We don't even know their names. Even great religious leaders, we'll find in this Rasik Mangal, there's a description that they're giving the names of so many devotees, lists of names. It says such and such Padmanabha Das or something like this. He had thousands of disciples, and that's the only mention. So you may have thousands of disciples, but you still might not get recorded in history. Rather, the great devotees, just like we see Gopal Bhatta Goswami, then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami came for his blessings to write Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, yes, on one condition, you don't mention me. That was his attitude. Of course, he mentioned his name when he was listing the name of the six Goswamis, just that these are my gurus, but he didn't write anything about his activities because he banned him from doing so. That was his attitude. Of course, some devotees, they may allow their activities to be told just to create faith in others. But if one is thinking how others should notice me, of course, it's not everyone's thinking I'll be a great guru, but at any level, if one's thinking people should know that I'm a great mridanga player or a great cook or a great book distributor or whatever, a great brahmachari, a great grihastha, I'm a very good grihastha, whatever it may be. As soon as we can do anything a little bit good, even it may not be very good, the tendency is to start to become puffed up. If we can do something a little bit better than someone else, we start to think, I am superior. So we should know that power is given by Krishna and power is taken by Krishna. And even someone may become very powerful in devotional service, Krishna can take it all away. Or he may take the person away also, if the person is misleading others. And Krishna may just take them away. Krishna's in control. We should always know that Krishna's in control. We're not able to do anything. We may have so many plans, even in Krishna's service, you may think, I'm going to do this and I'll do that, but we can't tell. Krishna may just take us away at any moment. We don't know. We've seen in our movement that devotees, they had plans what they were going to do, and then Krishna just took them away for whatever reason he had. So we should know that we are completely dependent on Krishna's mercy. We don't have any power of our own, nothing. Completely dependent on his mercy. And we should not desire that I shall be noticed or respected. These desires are very bad. They destroy any hope of bhakti. One should simply think how I can be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Let me try to serve the mission of the acharyas. And if one does so, one may be empowered by them. But then the little power comes, we have to be careful. Always careful. We're always meant to be servants. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this? So you should pray to become empowered to present all of Prabhupada's books in Punjabi. That's a great service. You do that. Very important service. What's the Punjabi? What's the population, Punjab? Well, people who read Punjabi, you could say, which would be approximately equal to the population of Punjab. 30 million? In East Punjab, that means, not Pakistan side. 2 crore, yeah. So that's a lot of people who need to know about Krishna. We have in much more minor languages, we have Prabhupada's books translated. In languages like Czech, where I think in Czech the total population... Well, if you put Czech and Slovakia together, where the language is almost the same, it's about 15 million. So they've got all of Prabhupada's books translated. In Holland, where anyway everyone knows English anyway, but they have, I'm not sure, but most of the books, I think, at least, translated. What's the population of Holland? Less than about 15 million, something like that. I don't know exactly. Is it less? It's a small country, but it's very densely populated. Dutch are very intelligent, materially very intelligent people. Very smart people. It's a much, considering the population of the country, the Dutch are much more prominent than you would expect them to be. Very intelligent. We had some very intelligent Dutch devotees. There's this Hare Krishna Das, he used to be there in London. He's still very intelligent. Very, very empowered. He had a debate with this atheist society in London. So there was a woman representing the atheist society, and whatever she said, he just completely defeated it, and she became so frustrated that in the end she said, "Oh my God." Great soul, no doubt. Prabhupada picked up so many great souls. So, anything else?
Mostly we see that those who are managing something, or the presidents or something, they get into this control.
Yeah, Ishvara Bhav, one who's managing, they get into control. Well, you have to, unless you have that, you can't manage or control. Management means there's some level of control. That's one of the qualities of the Kshatriya which is praised, Ishvara Bhava. That's a good quality if it's used in Krishna's service. But just before that, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna had decried Ishvaraham. This Ishvara Bhava is demoniac. And then just shortly after that, in the 18th chapter, well, he must be praising it because he says, what is it? What are the qualities? Tejo, Driti, Dritir, Daksha, Yudhecha, Apalayanam, Danam, Ishvara Bhava. These are all desirable qualities for a Kshatriya. This power, expertise, determination, not running away in battle. How does it go? I missed one. Then giving in charity, and Ishvara Bhava, the feeling of being a controller. So for a Kshatriya, it's good if he takes control for the benefit of others. But then if that turns into Ishvaraham Aham Bhogi, instead of thinking Ishvaraham Aham Sevi, I am the servant, if he thinks Aham Bhogi, then he becomes a demon. So you have to be careful also. Ishvara Bhav means we should always think, just like Bharat, he kept the shoes of Ram, kept the padukas of Ram on the throne, and he ruled the kingdom like that. So we should do like that. If we're given the charge of taking charge of others, we should do so with the shoes of Ram on our heads. So, in the temples, you come and you get the satari, chatari, I think they say in Tamil. They stick it on your head. Remember, that's my position. I'm under the shoes of the Lord. Not that I shall step in the shoes of the Lord. Kaikeyi wanted Bharat to step into Rama's shoes, but he wanted to keep them on his head. That should be our attitude. There's a saying in English, to step into someone's shoes. It means to take over their role. But in Vedic culture, that's not at all wanted. One should become the servant of the lotus feet of the superiors. Yeah, okay. When the guru gives the disciple a service, they feel they need some extra energy. Can they pray for that? You must pray, always. Prarthana karoi shada narotamadas. Without praying, then we don't have, the energy doesn't come through. Guru will generally give service higher than the level you're on, and all, so you can always come up. Not just easy, that you should be, yes, this I can do, and then that's called the Peter principle in management studies. I believe that's called that. Everyone rises to their level of incompetence. That means you're put in some job, and then you can see you can do more. You can go to a higher position. So you get promoted, and you can see, oh, you're doing well in this. You can go to a higher position. You get promoted and promoted and promoted until you come to a level which is too high for you, and you don't do it properly, and then you stop there. So everyone rises to their level of incompetence. When you reach the position where you're doing you're incompetent, then you stop there. So, but in Krishna consciousness, you can do anything for Krishna. One of the important qualities of a leader is knowing what he can't do and engaging others to do that. Just like Prabhupada told that story, I believe, of this Ford, Henry Ford. He was, some business competitors took him to court and said, how can you set up all this factory, and he can't even read and write? So then they called, they asked him some difficult question about engineering. He said, can you answer this? Yeah, no problem. He said, called his chief engineer, said, answer the question. He knew who to employ. That's, in modern management language, that's called empowering others. Delegating tasks. Empowering, what's the other word? Facilitating others. That you, just like Prabhupada, he detected the basic fault in the materialistic scientists' reasoning, and he engaged his scientist disciples to investigate that further and expose that in terms that the scientists could understand and relate to. So Prabhupada didn't personally think, well, now I have to go to university and study all these things. But he gave the task of doing that to others. And even, I remember years ago that Prabhupada Vishnu Swami told me, it was his observation, because he had been with Prabhupada, he didn't have so much association. He had some association of Prabhupada in England, but he had more in India. So he told me that in the West, Prabhupada, he kind of started the movement, and then he just let the devotees carry it on according to how They know how to do things according to their way. Of course, he didn't like the lavish spending. Prabhupada didn't like that feature of American life. But he said in India, Prabhupada managed every detail because he was bringing the Western devotees and they didn't know how to operate in that culture. So Prabhupada personally controlled every little thing down. What is the price of the sabji? Why are you spending so much? He would be on top of everything. But in the West, he gave the basic principles and he let the devotees, this is Prabhupada's observation, he let the devotees spread the... He gave ideas and this and that, but he didn't get so much involved. He let the devotees work it out themselves, how to operate in their own culture. So that was one of the... We can see one of... Who is that? Recently someone wrote to me, they're doing some management course or something like this. So one of the tasks he was set in the university, one of the tasks he was set was to write about a great leader, and he wrote about Prabhupada. So one of Prabhupada's great qualities was that he brought out leadership qualities in others. I mean, who could have imagined that some of these hippies and then they become leaders? He managed them, and then he gave them big things to do. So it was like a challenge for them. And then they, like, someone with that management or that leadership tendency, that's the kshatriya above. They like a challenge. They want something big to do. So Prabhupada gave that, and at the same time, he controlled them all. I remember seeing. Who was that saying? That Prabhupada, physically Prabhupada was not very big. He was about 5'6" tall, something like that. Well, what's that in centimeters? I don't know. But not very tall. And there'd be all these huge Brahmananda, big, and Hare Krishna very tall, and not just big physically, but big egoistically also. I'm not saying, that's not necessarily saying that in a bad way, but they were big men, you know. They were, everyone knew they were big men. Tamal Krishnamurti, big, you know, big, heavy leader. Prabhupada had them under control. Sometimes he had to whip them, but Prabhupada had them under control. Very strong personality, you could say. Power came from Krishna. So Prabhupada, he was definitely the leader. Everyone could recognize that. In a way which, if we compare to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't take that kind of role, actually. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was more withdrawn. He knew what was going on in the imaginary, he was more withdrawn. Whereas Prabhupada was like, he was like the commander-in-chief of the forces, making play. Okay, you go there, you do that. We have this plan. Distribute the books in America, send the money to India, we're going to build the temples. So Prabhupada was coordinating everything like that. But he was always a humble servant. That we can learn from studying Prabhupada, how one can be a real leader and at the same time be more humble than a blade of grass. You had a question?
Well, how about speaking it in here?
All right, never mind.
You spoke about Shaktya
Vaishavata. Shaktya Vaishavata, yeah.
So how did they react to their horoscope?
How they react to their horoscope? Well, Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktya Vaishavata for ruling the world. And that's predicted. That was predicted at the time of his... That's described there, how they read his astrological chart and this and that. He's going to be a great ruler and this and that. So how did he react to his astrological chart? When people started to praise him, he said, "Don't praise me. I didn't do anything yet. So when I do something, you praise. That may be appropriate, but not in a... The chart is there, all right, but you know, it's just a chart right now. So let's see what happens." That's what I think when these politicians, they get voted into power and they celebrate and everything. Why are they celebrating? After doing something, they should celebrate. that we did something, we did some service to the people, then they should celebrate. But they celebrate, it means, the fact that they celebrate that they got elected shows that they wanted to be elected for their own sense gratification. They wanted to enjoy the position. Actually, they shouldn't celebrate. They should humbly say, well, thank you for your putting your faith in me, and I'll do my best to the best of my capacity to serve you. That they should say. But they have no idea. Democracy in India is a flop. Democracy has been taken over by all the worst class of people. All the criminals. So what's the meaning? The democracy in India is just another, it's just another mafia operation, that's all. Politics is dominated by all the world. So it's a hopeless situation for the citizens. You can't vote for an honest person because there's no honest people in politics. Well, they say the Prime Minister of India is, the present Prime Minister is an honest man, but then you know a man by his company, and his company is not good at all. So he's honestly supporting all the rogues. So what's the use of that? Better have one Arjuna, one Parikshit, than thousands of these gundas. Mlecha Rajanyarupina. Prajaste Bhakshiyashanti Mlecha Rajanyarupina. Bhagavatam already predicted that in Kali Yuga, the mlechas, meat eaters in the form of kings, Raja means who is a very noble person, but the mlecha means one who doesn't follow any Vedic principles. The worst people, they have taken the position of the leaders of society, and their job is to eat the citizens. Maybe figuratively, or it has even been, what's the word, actually. There was one in the 1970s, the ruler of Uganda used to eat his political opponents, literally. He would kill them and eat them. Idi Amin. But figuratively, they eat. They make you work so hard, and they take it all away in taxes. They eat your energy, and then they, whatever little money they give, they